Following is part two of Father John Hardin's talk on the need for the cross in spiritual progress. Father Hardin.
I define paganism as Christianity without the cross. And that, by the way, is the kind of Christianity some people are trying to sell us today. Do you agree? They are teaching us and telling us to follow a Christ who was never crucified. Are there any questions before I go on to part four?
A lot of non-Catholic churches, I know in England, for instance, the Methodist Church, you will never see a crucifix in that church. You will see a cross, but never a crucifix.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be reminded that Christ died for us, but to redeem us.
They told me that. And how few Protestant churches will even have a cross on the steeple. Though in the ecumenical movement, I've noticed some, and I've talked to enough ministers and urged them, look, are you Christians? Sure we are. Why don't you put a cross on the top of your steeple? In any case. But by and large, they don't have crosses.
Yes.
By the way, the forthcoming, I hope to finish the manuscript by Christmas, of the question and answer catechism for Doubleday. I've got about 1,700 questions and answers already. My problem is keeping them down. But I think it's either the first question or one of the first. What is the most popular sign of a Christian? It is the sign of the cross. And I say anything, now you've got to use your head, but be creative to surround the people. I don't mean you're going to put crosses all over, but you know what I'm trying to get across, of symbols of the cross. For example, I was trained long before I entered the novitiate to never take anything without making the sign of the cross. And entering the home, make the sign of the cross. Even to drink a glass of water. At any rate, we cannot overestimate the importance of even symbolization.
The book most attacked when the turmoil in the church began with the imitation of Christ. I heard more conferences on the negativism of the imitation of Christ and how it should not be used, because that's what makes it so bad. And
well, this is what we have to, we've got to be very shrewd, we've got to be clever almost, not in disguising the cross, but in pointing out that, of course, if you're not in love, then any inconvenience, well, is a burden. But love thrives on sacrifice, right? If you're really in love with Christ, Lord, what can I do today? Brother.
Father, in my mind, you left one point open-ended, and would you clarify? The second providential purpose, reparation for penalty due to sin. You said if we, since every sin deserves pain, if we apparently don't have enough cross given to us that we should embrace or take upon ourselves.
Yes.
If I was superior, would I still have the right to limit or control or direct the type of cross?
For our religious, of course, this implies it should be under obedience.
Okay.
Now, either the confessor, and in some cases, interior, the distinction I make in counseling people, in the cross which is totally interior, then it could be either the person's own conscience or, if necessary, the confessor. But in either assuming the cross or undertaking mortification or whatever, which affects the external order, which others see and will be somehow influenced by, that should always be cleared with the superior. So interior suffering, which can be considerable, which does not affect the external order, can, I'm not saying it necessarily should be, but it can be decided by the person, him or herself, and say, or also with the confessor. Things that are done in the quiet of one's room that don't affect others, and those that, for example, say not, well, stopping somebody's, well, being unkind to me. I don't mean that the person is sinning in the process, but you know what I mean. Shall I continue taking it? Well, maybe I shouldn't, but maybe I should. But where it affects the external order, the superior should be both consulted and permission should be obtained. I really made a mistake. I said we were going on to part 4. No, we still have number 8. Do you have 7?
We have 8, sanctification.
Oh, well, sanctification, but I didn't finish it. Pardon me. Sanctification is, of course, growth in the life of God, in the soul. Increase of grace in the soul. Depends, that is, this growth, the sanctification, depends on many factors. But there are 2 factors. Let me put them briefly on the board, at least, much as I can reach across, because the cross is part of the theology of sanctification. In order to grow in God's grace, first of all, we must first be in the state of grace. That stands to reason. You don't grow unless you're first alive. Secondly, the person will grow in God's grace according to God's will. In other words, God decides who's going to become how holy. It's not all up to us. Some people have a better start. Our Lady had a much better start than we had. And some people just, you take a Teresa of Lisieux, you take a John of the Cross, you read their lives, and you say, Lord, no wonder they became saints. Look at the help they got from God from the very beginning. So that's up to him. He wants some people to be more holy, and we've got to be humble enough and say, well, maybe she has more grace. You follow the logic. But the one thing, and I want to stress this first, the one thing on our part which is most necessary for growth in holiness is the use of our free will. And voluntariety is just a fancy word for the use of the voluntas, of the will. So that other things being equal, and they never are, God's designs on any two of us is not the same. All right? But assuming, for the sake of comparison, that other things are equal, one person becomes holier than another because the one person uses his will more. That makes sense? Well, this covers everything. Any way in which we can use God's will in serving him. One reason for the long, drawn-out early training, for example, instruction. A large part of formation is instruction. In order to motivate the will. Because unless the will knows why it should do certain things and how it should do them and even what to do, it may be bursting with generosity, but that's all. It'll just be bursting. It won't become holy. So the use of the will on our part is the single most important factor in growth in holiness. All right? That's simply bread and butter in spiritual theology. However, having said that, now the cross. What is it that most surely evokes the use of the free will? Since we're supposed to use, we must in fact use our free wills in serving God. When are the greatest demands made on our free will? Now the language here is a little strange because we're dealing with the mysterious interior. When are we most willful? When are we most, well, when do we use our will to the utmost? Sister Linda, any ideas? Let me put it this way. Let me ask a question. Is it when things are easy or when things are hard?
When things are easy.
Hard.
Oh, yes, hard.
Well, I don't believe it's neither, Father.
Please?
I honestly don't believe it's neither. It's neither when they're hard, it's just that you try and live out your religious commitment every day, and that
well,
surely is crossing.
You are so right, brother. You are so right.
I mean, I'm not trying to be funny or anything like that.
I know you're not. And even when you said, by the way, I think it's worth it. Why did you say, because I would be interested in knowing, why did you say that? Now, I probably wasn't clear in specifying just what I meant by this voluntarily. So I'm trying to bring out the idea of when are we most willful? When is our will, just our will, not our feelings, not our emotions, when, for example, do we do things almost exclusively because we want to, when we've got no other reason in the world for doing it? That's what I meant by my question. Now, why did you say when it's easy? Because I'm sure you had a reason.
Well, probably I was thinking that you really didn't have to apply your will, and you just...
Well, that's precisely what
you
I was...
You didn't have to use it or put the effort into it.
By the way, look, this is not my idea. This is the church's teaching. This is ascetical theology, you see. I just want to be clear. And if you come up with different answers, it's because I wasn't clear. Brother?
Well, I would agree with the easy, and this is why. Because our nature, our sinful human nature, tends towards that which is easy. And it's easy to will something that's easy, because it doesn't require a lot.
Well, except... I would say it's easy to do, but not easy to will. This is, if we can finish this up, we've got part four left. The essence of virtue is in the will. The essence of prayer is in the will. The essence of sanctity or sanctification on our part is in the will. Now the question before the house is, when do I most use my will? Sister?
When I go against myself.
But really, do you get the idea?
Mm-hmm.
Now it should be, and it with God's grace it will be easier. And Christ tells us, my yoke is easy and my burden light. But he didn't say it was not going to be a yoke or a burden. See? He does give us peace and joy in his service. So, the role, therefore, of difficulty, which is the way I identify for our purpose the cross, the difficulty, call it yoke and burden, Christ's own vocabulary, all right? The difficulty inherent in serving Christ as he wants to be served, there will be a burden, there will be a yoke. It is then that we most use our wills, by the way. This is part of our Christian philosophy. Because the will is not in the emotions, it's not in our feelings. Is this ever practically important?
I have to make a drive.
Okay. So that no matter how you might say, well, how should I call it? No matter how little satisfaction a person gets out of doing whatever they're doing, no matter how much natural pleasure, what is it in the heart of the essence that I do, which if I do, causes me to grow in sanctity? The use of my will. In other words, no other desire is satisfied. I don't say that it won't be, but it needn't be. And if you're like me, there are plenty of occasions, I don't want to say every day, but at least in a given period of time, let's make it every 3 days, there's at least one thing that I get no selfish satisfaction from doing. But remember the brothers in the gospel, where the one said, "Sister, could you finish that out?" Told his father.
What is in it for us if we follow?
Not that one. But remember when one said he would do it.
Yes, Father, I will go out. And the second, the first son says, "No, Father, I will not. I'm going out." And so he relents later.
Yes.
And then, but the second son says, "Yes, Father, I will, but did not."
Get it? Now it's the first son we're talking about. You get it?
Sure.
Where everything in us says no. But we come to our senses and we save it. But God wants it, so I'll do it. And that is the eighth and final value of the cross. It enables us to use the will as nothing else in life will evoke. I continue, for example, teaching a class. I remember talking to one of our Jesuit priests years ago, just the soul of kindness. And he taught four classes of German. Well, the youngsters in high school, the last thing they wanted to learn was German. They didn't want to study German at all. And he was such a gentle person. He couldn't rebuke them or punish them. So his life was four classes of agony every day. He's the one who told me, he was my confessor, when I was a scholastic, I taught another boring subject, ancient history, which nobody wanted to learn, and I was supposed to insist they turn in their homework every day. And this priest was always joyful, always smiling. said, Father, what's the secret of happiness? I have never forgotten. The secret of happiness is to love to take it. To love to take it. But you must love the one for whom you take it. Okay? We all want to now look at pedagogy, or in other words, how, practically speaking, to make spiritual progress from or through the cross. The first pedagogical means recommended by all the spiritual masters is frequent and regular meditation on the Passion of Christ. If we wonder how a person can meditate, not just occasionally, but even frequently, on the Passion of Christ, I would recommend reading Saint Alphonsus Liguori and Saint Paul of the Cross, the first, the founder of the Redemptorists and Redemptoristines, and the second, the founder of the Passionists, a number of derivative forms going back to Saint Paul of the Cross. Last week, when I started the formation program in Boston, we had a good turnout, about 45 from about 7 communities in Boston. It was sub-zero weather, and some traveled 50 and more miles. In any case, while there, the hosting community were the Sisters of Jesus Crucified, founded by a Passionist. It was really inspiring to see the cross and crucifixion and emblems of the Passion all over the place. I think we can have more of that. At any rate, meditation on the Passion of Christ. As you know, nowadays, we even now have crucifixes that you'd be hard put to know that Christ actually suffered. Isn't that true? We have become such an effete and leisurely and comfort-seeking society. We are liable even to forget that the founder of our faith died on the cross. Mother Teresa does not allow any recordings in her community. I wish, however, I had for you some 42 weeks that I taught last year on her request, the Passion of Christ. 2.5 hours a week for over 40 weeks. First, then, meditation on the Passion of Christ, and should be started early. One of my definitions of paganism is Christianity without the cross. Until religious 10, 20, or more years in the community run into the cross and wonder, what's wrong? Maybe I don't have a location. You want to know what word you can use, what name you can call them, without being offensive. Stupid. That's the first piece of pedagogy. At least I would say on Fridays, and specializing during the season of Lent. So first, the Passion of Christ. Secondly, during the day, especially when occasions arise, and they arise quite often, to make conscious acts of resignation to God's will. Some of the most, in fact, the most powerful statements of resignation to the will of God were made by Christ during his own passion, during his long discourse and prayer at the Last Supper, during his agony in Gethsemane, and on the cross. In other words, especially when the Lord touches us, or as his expression goes, when his hand lies somewhat more heavy on our shoulders. The simple name of Jesus, provided the person is aware of what he or she is doing, can be a most effective act of resignation.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.